What do fertilizer, body lotion, paracetamol tablets, and mayonnaise have in common? And what do they have to do with climate change? Hello, and welcome to Never Lick the Spoon, the podcast from the Institute for Molecular Science and Engineering at Imperial College London. I'm Isabella von Holstein, and in this series, I'm going to continue to bring you stories from the teeny tiny world of molecules and how they're being used to solve some of the big challenges facing our planet. Fertilizer, body lotion, paracetamol tablets, and mayonnaise are all formulations, a class of modern products which are all complex mixtures of many different elements. Just have a look at those ingredients lists. These kinds of advanced formulated chemical products are everywhere in modern life. We use them daily to stay healthy, warm, dry, fed, clean, and connected. This week, I'm talking to three researchers at Imperial who all work on an aspect of formulations and who are working with IMSI on formulations projects at the moment. So let's start at the very, very small scale. What makes a formulation interesting from a molecular perspective? Over to Professor João Cabral, Professor of Soft Matter at the Department of Chemical Engineering.
Formulations are a kind of an umbrella term for complex and complicated mixtures. And they are complicated because they have often multiple components and they all interact. And complex because the actual interactions are not trivial. If you look at the back of a label of a formulation, you'll see 20 odd components and you can see, well, that looks complicated. But on top of that, it's complex because the components can be surfactants, so they're detergents, can be polymers, so macromolecules, they can be colloids, so nanoparticles or the microparticles, they can have enzymes, multiple solvents, and so the interactions between them, some of them are strictly thermodynamic but complex, others they are just dispersion, so they are out of equilibrium, and so they are both complicated and complex, and I mean that's why we love them. But they also underpin a huge industry, in fact several industries: personal care and home care, pharma, agrichem, oils and lubricants, coatings, foods, of course. It underpins a number of industries.
One of the industrial sectors João mentioned is pharmaceuticals. So how exactly does a formulation affect a medicine? Here's Dr. Nazila Kamali, senior lecturer in the Department of Chemistry.
Formulations are critical to drug delivery because they can really significantly affect the drug's efficacy and safety and stability. A formulation can really help a drug in terms of influencing how fast it can be absorbed and also how it's distributed throughout the body and how it's metabolized and broken down. And so formulation design has to be optimized to ensure that the drug is more effectively reaching the disease target for therapy. And of course, safety, you know, that's one of the biggest hurdles. We really need to look at adverse effects. So formulations, if done in a different way, can actually lead to allergies and hypersensitivity or toxicity. So it's quite important to pay attention to the formulation just as much as we do to the drug itself. And obviously, the formulations also bring a lot of stability to your drug payload. What you design in the lab on the bench is very different in nature to what actually ends up in a patient from a formulation perspective, because we need to think about how is this drug going to be stored until the point of use? Does it need to go into minus 20 degrees or minus 80 degrees? You know, you can name things such as cryoprotectants and sugar additives that are added to stop the aggregation of the formulation or the drug, because we want to make sure that our drug component can be viable until it's used in the patients.
Okay, you get it. Formulations are complicated and they matter. They can also be hard to change once developed and approved by a regulator. This effect is probably clearest in pharma. Some reformulated products might require new clinical trials to check they still work in the same way. This sort of regulation to protect consumers can also be a barrier to updating a fertilizer, a body lotion, or mayonnaise. So if it's so difficult, why might a company want to reformulate a product?
Quite often, we have external factors that make us change things. For instance, there could be a regulatory issue. This has happened not so long ago, that the microbeads were banned in the EU. course, the industries knew this was coming, so we needed to reformulate. But there could also be supply chain issues. If you rely on a certain set of chemistries and all of a sudden the availability of these change, either because of climatic changes or even a geopolitical change that means that you can no longer rely on a certain feedstock, then you need to go back to the drawing board and do the same magic again. And the final one is the environmental, because increasingly we shift these formulations to become more sustainable. Industry as a whole and academia increasingly are thinking more holistically about the entire life cycle of these.
Climate change is a major theme here. This comes in two parts, mitigating climate change and adapting to a changed climate. On the one hand, that means reducing emissions, and on the other, it means making products more resilient to extremes of temperature or manufacturing processes more flexible to variations in water availability or feedstock type. Given how many different formulated products there are and how widely used they are, how much of a difference could this work make to climate change?
So in our view, climate-proofing formulations for drug delivery can make a significant difference to climate change because it can help reduce the environmental impact of drug manufacturing and distribution. We're really kind of taking on concepts such as green chemistry, renewable materials, energy efficiency, and also the efficiency of the transportation process from manufacturing to delivery and point of use as well. So, for example, in our work, we've switched from using organic solvents to water. So we try to do our chemistry on molecular Lego, if you like, in water to make it industrially more amenable. We want to use sustainable and non-toxic chemicals to ensure that we're minimizing the environmental impact of our drug production at every stage. We want to encourage the use of renewable materials in our drug delivery systems, especially biodegradable polymers. So the world produces a lot of cellulose, a lot of natural polymers such as chitosan. So these polymers can be natural excipients in formulations, and they can also allow for sustainable packaging. Now there's a lot of research and investment into this area. We want to minimize waste generation because what we do in the lab eventually has to be scaled up in a manufacturing setting. And this could mean tons and tons of material used. Energy efficiency, again, is also part of our climate proofing of formulations. This is basically concepts such as using continuous manufacturing and bringing in automation and process intensification, which is something chemical engineers are very good at. And of course, we also want to reduce the energy consumption and carbon emission overall. Transport is also a really big one. Getting medicines and formulated drug products across the globe is quite a huge effort. And how can we reduce the carbon footprint associated with drug delivery?
So what will it take to meet this challenge? Here's Professor Jerry Heng, professor in particle technology in the Department of Chemical Engineering.
So training people is key in ensuring that we're able to meet this challenge. So equipping people with the necessary skills. The skills that would be necessary are those with the ability to respond robustly in an agile fashion with emerging situations which are becoming more rapid, right? And this necessitates very good understanding of the foundation skill sets around the science and engineering. If you understand the role of each of your ingredients, then finding an alternative, a substitute, a better ingredient is no longer a trial and error basis, right? So it's based on the fundamental science that we know the hydrogen bond is critical or important in this interaction, and hence we want these hydroxyl groups. Or
that fits in nicely with what you said before about needing to be agile and needing to react. So maybe in previous generations you had to understand this so that you could make a good product, and now we need to understand this so that we can make a good product and then change it next year when one of the ingredients isn't available.
Correct. And things are often locked in, right? And in some sectors, due to regulatory or supply chains, we lock things in minus 5, minus 10 years. I would also argue that advances in molecular and experimental techniques, molecular modeling tools will enable predictions which are more accurate. And finally, is borrowing that system's thinking in everything that we do to look at it in a whole picture, more holistic approach. It seems like we are constantly needing to know more and more, right? But I think we're also very fortunate that tools are more accessible, experimental techniques are more accessible.
And here's another very modern element.
The world is becoming a lot more aware of the power of prediction and automation and artificial intelligence and machine learning. There's so many opportunities that this big field is going to bring to the processes of formulation, to the processes of manufacturing drugs. It's a very good investment for companies to start to work with experts who can help them predict and optimize all of these different parameters involved, from chemical reactions to optimal conditions and reducing all the experimental trials. And by doing this, we are, you know, looking at reducing waste and byproducts.
Jerry, Nazila and Joao are all working with IMSI to build a centre for doctoral training focused on climate-proofing formulations. This centre will train a group of at least 50 PhD students who will all carry out independent research projects related to formulations and climate change. This sort of centre is run in collaboration with organisations who develop and use formulations. What makes this sort of training structure special?
The CDT is unique because it brings together cohorts where you could learn from one another, the peer-to-peer interactions.
What sort of previous training will these people have had?
I expect science and engineering as a typical background. They will be chemical engineers, mechanical engineers, aeronautical engineers. They will be chemists, physicists. But I would not be surprised if we have mathematicians as well, particularly in that sort of systems, big data, AI type of area. But we'll be working very closely with end users. So the end users could be industry, government agencies, museums.
An important theme of any centre for doctoral training is EDI. What is EDI? And why does it matter in research teams?
EDI stands for Equality, Diversity and Inclusion. And it's really working to ensure that there's this mindset that everybody can work freely together and everyone feels welcome in a team, regardless of their race and gender and sexual orientation and religion and so on. The lab in itself is a very diverse environment. Lots of people working at different levels, different ages and different backgrounds. And so the success of getting things done and all comes down to the pairs of hands who work on these projects in the lab. EDI becomes so important in training PhD students. The PhD program itself is training students to learn to think for themselves and generate new ideas. And so it's quite important to be able to discuss your ideas with other team members and learn to incorporate diverse viewpoints. It's a holistic approach to research, to education, to working as scientists and researchers together. We have to also bear in mind that we are preparing students for the workforce, and we live in a totally globalized world. We can find ourselves in very diverse teams in the work environment. And so this is really important for students to understand this perspective and be able to work at their best and perform at their best once they finish.
Thank you to Joao Cabral, Nazila Kamali and Jerry Heng for talking to me about this topic. Joao was previously a guest on episode 23 about the Trojan molecule, and Jerry was a guest on episode 22 about crystal healing. Have a listen to find out more about their work. Next time you pick up a sack of fertilizer, a bottle of body lotion, a packet of paracetamol tablets or a jar of mayonnaise, have a look at the ingredients list and have a think about their climate impact. How much energy and water will you have to use to employ the product or to dispose of it? How much energy, raw materials and water will use to develop the product or manufacture it or ship it to you? These environmental impacts are right under our noses as consumers, and we rely on formulation scientists to take good decisions about them. Share your thoughts with us on Twitter at imperial_IMSI or email us at imsi@imperial.ac.uk. Until next time, take care. And remember, never lick the spoon.